This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. There are men and women that if you take the time to talk to them, you're going to find out they've done some pretty incredible things for the sake of our freedom. And we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget that price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. The gentleman we're going to speak to today is a Navy veteran of World War II, 88-year-old George Chrisman of Northridge, California. I want to thank his daughter, Linda, for letting me know about his story. Now, you're pretty proud of your daughter, I bet. How long was she in the Navy?
She was in the Navy about 27 years.
27 years, and I bet she outranks you.
She did. She came out a commander.
Uh-huh.
And I was only second class.
But why do I have a feeling she might not have gone into the Navy if it wasn't for you?
She wanted to do everything Daddy did.
I guess so. And I guess there's a little element of that in your story, because you grew up here in Southern California, growing up in Hawthorne. Your father was a World War I veteran.
Yes.
Not of the Navy, though.
No, Army.
Did he ever tell you what he did in World War I?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Were you ever curious?
Oh, not really. I didn't know much about it then.
Uh-huh. So you're born in 1927. That tells me you were about 14 years old when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. You remember that day, December 7th, 1941?
Yes, very much so.
Tell me what you remember about that day. Where were you and how'd you find out?
We were in the house and everything was told to black out. Don't go outside. Keep everything dark.
Was that a little spooky?
It is spooky when you're 14 years old. Somebody's attacking your country.
Were you envisioning the Japanese bombers coming over Los Angeles?
Yes, sir. It was very, very, you know, run out, walk, sneak outside and see, look up in the sky, see if you see anything.
Uh-huh. For so many of us who weren't alive back then, it's hard to fathom that kind of atmosphere here in the United States. Maybe people think of 9/11 and they can identify a little bit. But what was it like in the weeks and months that followed in Los Angeles?
Very scary. My father was one of those home guards. He had the rifle and he'd walk out on the road and walk up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have to stay in the house.
And you're obviously a teenager. You're just starting high school at the time. Did you have any Japanese-American friends?
Yes.
What happened to them in the months that followed?
Most of those were taken to encampment.
Was that hard when they were taken away to the internment camps? Was that kind of mystifying for you?
You can't understand what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law up in Oregon was telling me about they had people up there that were radioing all the positions of the aircraft factories, et cetera, around Los Angeles.
Mm.
And they had a radio station up there. And after they captured them, they couldn't figure out what to do. And they figured that that's when they took all the Japanese and encamped them, because they couldn't control them.
And I guess if you lived during the time, it was understandable.
Yes, it was.
Now it's, for people in today's world, it's kind of hard to understand.
It's hard to understand why they took them all.
Yeah. And I'm sure you saw them as schoolmates, right? You didn't think they were sinister or anything?
No. You didn't feel any danger with them.
Mm-hmm. When did it start to weigh on your mind that there's a war going on and maybe you should do something about it?
As the Japanese were progressing, it would get worse and worse and worse and worse, and they were taking this and that and the other thing, pretty soon be here in the United States.
So you decided you wanted to get in?
I wanted to get in and do what I could for the country.
And how'd your parents feel about that?
They'd backed me up, and they thought that was a good idea.
So you actually went to sign up for the Navy before you even turned 17?
Right.
And your parents signed for you?
Parents signed for me. 2 days after I was 17, I went out boot camp down in San Diego.
Uh-huh. I know that's a long time ago. But do you remember what your expectations were, what you thought the Navy was going to be like?
I thought I'd be on the ship. But after I went to San Diego and went to radio school, went to Oceanside to become in the Beach Party Team 62, we had to learn landings and stuff like that to work with the Beachmaster and be his communication system, because he's the one that led all the landings. Unloaded all the ships.
And we've had a few gentlemen on this program over the years who were what at that time were called frogmen. Now we call them Navy SEALs.
Right.
How similar was what you were doing then to what we know now as a Navy SEAL?
Well, after we landed on Okinawa, and most of the demolition team, they call them demolition team, was killed. They felt the beach party team, who was going to go ashore, could do the demolition team and then go ashore and do the same thing. So they sent us to Maui to learn the training of the underwater demolition, how to blow channelways and all those kind of things.
Were you eager to get overseas and be a part of this?
I wanted to do what I could for our country.
And you actually had a sister who ended up in the Navy in World War II as well.
My sister ended up in the waves.
Uh-huh. Where was she? What did she do?
She went to Long Beach and worked with the chaplain there.
Uh-huh.
Handled all of in and out people that were being shipped out.
So, 17 years old, in the Navy, 1944, when you finally headed overseas, what do you remember about that? Were you scared? Were you nervous? Were you excited? What do you remember?
You're excited, but you're scared. It took a long time on the ship to get to Hawaii, where we based, and then from there we flew to Johnson Island, Kwajalein Island, Guam, and then to Leyte to load ships there for the Okinawa invasion.
So Leyte was already secure.
Yes.
And you guys were there to prepare for this massive invasion
right.
at Okinawa, which oftentimes is forgotten or overshadowed, even though it was the big battle at the end of World War II in the Pacific. And you were there from the beginning.
Right.
The first day, Easter Sunday.
Easter Sunday.
April 1, 1945.
Right.
So are you 18 years old yet? You're still 17?
No, 18.
When's your birthday?
January.
Okay.
We didn't land until April 1st.
Yeah, so you're 18 years old, Easter Sunday. Walk me through that day. What do you remember? What was the first thing that happened that day?
That day, we climbed out of the cargo ship, lounged the cargo nets, loaded ourselves onto them Amtraks because they weren't sure what the beach was. We get into the beach with the ship. So we went on the Amtraks. We gathered out. It was still dark. Gathered around a big circle. We had Easter sunrise service there with the chaplain. And after the chaplain had the Easter sunrise service, we left for the beach. And about that time, my commander, the beach master, had his radio, and all the big ships started shelling the beach where we were going to land to clear it further. And then as soon as we got near the beach, stopped that shelling, and the Amtrak continued on. The Army went ashore. About the third wave, we went ashore, dug our foxholes, set up the radio communications and beach markers, and started unloading ships. Very scary.
I would imagine so, and a pretty important role in that invasion. But you said the first thing you guys did was you had an Easter sunrise service. The
right.
chaplain led the way with that. Do you remember anything about what was said there or what that meant to you to start that day that way?
Nope. Just scary.
Yeah. I imagine you felt like you were going to need some extra protection.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
And so you talk about the beachmaster and this landing party. So basically your guy's job was to get there first and set up some kind of organization so all these waves and waves and waves of troops coming ashore would be organized and going in the right direction.
Right.
Is that right?
The beachmaster's job is to direct that landing.
Uh-huh. It sounds like a pretty dangerous job too, though.
Well, yes, it is.
Did you guys come under enemy fire?
Yes. We had a lot of Japanese up there in the mountains that were shooting at us.
Uh-huh. So what did you do?
Duck.
You had a foxhole and you'd...
Yeah, but the foxhole was only about a foot deep.
That doesn't do much good.
Because you had hard pan.
Uh-huh.
So you dug whatever you could and you lay down in there, and then it rained and we got full of water and didn't worry about the water. Just get down in there.
I'm trying to imagine myself in your shoes here. You're 18 years old. You're in a foxhole on the beach at Okinawa, and Japanese shells are coming in.
Well, the shells weren't coming in. It was just small fire.
Just small arms
yeah.
fire. But you're still feeling a little danger there.
Yes, especially at night.
And there's not a whole lot you can do to protect yourself, is there?
No.
So what goes through your mind when you're in that foxhole and you still hear these rounds going off around you?
Hope you live for the next day. And when that first day, we looked up there and it was a little house about, 50 yards or 100 yards away. They were flying the Japanese flag.
Mm-hmm.
So about three of us went up there, and first we called in for an American flag to be sent in. They sent the flag in. When we got the flag, we went over took the flagpole down. It's one of those flagpoles where you pull a pin out and the whole pole comes down.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the flag down. We put the American flag up and put the flag back. Pull back up, and that little house that was there, we didn't know it at the time, but there was a guy up on the roof was shooting at people. So eventually, after we had the American flag up, we went up there with a couple of hand grenades and blew up the whole building, and he was down on the ground, dead.
But you didn't know he was there when you were taking the flag.
No.
He could have killed you.
Oh, yeah. And then after I took the flag down, I put the flag in my pocket. You got those jumbo pockets, and put it in my pocket. And when I got back on the ship 4 days later, I still had the flag.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got home, I put it in my treasure chest. And my daughter was going through my stuff for 4 or 5 years. Well, it's been about 10 years now. And she found this flag. Said, "What's this flag, Dad?" And I told her. I said, "That's the one we took off a flagpole in Okinawa." And so I folded it up and put it away, and I still got the flag now.
And I imagine there were a few American servicemen, whether they were Navy like you or Army or Marines or even Army Air Corps, that ended up on Okinawa, because that was a long, drawn-out battle over a lot of territory. There are probably quite a few of them that ended up bringing a flag of some kind back. But my guess is yours might be the first one. Could anyone have grabbed the flag on Okinawa before you did?
Any one of the three that took it down. I cut it off because it was tied onto the pole.
Yes, but so there were three of you, but there was only one flag.
Right.
So you got that flag. And I'm just saying, timeline-wise, because this is the first day of the battle, and you're in there early on, you were probably the first American to take a Japanese flag on Okinawa.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Iwo Jima, they had Marines, they had photographers.
Yep.
Okinawa was Army. They didn't have photographers.
So you could have been part of a Joe Rosenthal photo if Rosenthal was there to take it.
Yeah.
What, and we'll talk more about that flag and how it's come back around and led to some other developments in more recent history. But what was the significance of that for you, to cut down this Japanese flag, not just to take it for yourself, but to put up in its place the Stars and Stripes?
That's amazing. A lot of memories go by there. I look back at that flag and salute it and say, "Oh, there's my flag.
Mm-hmm.
That's our country."
And there was a long way to go in that battle.
Oh, yes. 10,000 a day was being killed.
And you'd be back on the ship for most of it.
Yeah.
But you did see some. So the first day on Okinawa, you're one of the first in. You take this flag. Still the Japanese are firing on you guys. How long did that day feel? We hear about June 6th of 44 and those guys who hit the beach at Normandy, and they call that the longest day. But how long of a day was April 1, 1945 for you?
Seemed like it never ended.
Yeah?
Especially about dusk. When it got dusk, it was about 50 Japanese planes coming over. Those kamikaze pilots. Oh, it just blackened the sky. And here they come, and you just jump in and dive into your foxhole. Here come the Beachmaster down the way. And he tripped over one of the wires from the beach marker.
Uh-huh.
And when he tripped over it, he fell, tipped over. You know, he used to be a football player. So he went over, and his helmet fell off. He gathered up the helmet, put it on his head, dove into his water-filled foxhole. I can still see that big, tall guy diving in that foxhole, got holding his helmet on his arm.
Uh-huh.
And these planes were terrible noise. And they couldn't get any planes off because it was just about dusk, and they didn't get any planes off. So all the ships at sea were firing.
So you have a pretty good seat for this show.
Yeah.
The ships are close enough to shore that you can see them.
Oh, yeah.
And you see the kamikazes attacking them. Is that a bit of a helpless feeling? Do you find yourself cheering?
Nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Just pray that you don't get hit.
Yeah, and pray those guys out on the ships are safe.
Because they've got some of those planes were hitting right near the beach, blowing
mm-hmm.
up.
Mm-hmm. Did you lose any friends that day?
No. Luckily, we were on the beach, and the Army was moving ahead.
Uh-huh.
We had friends that got shot, but that's about it.
Uh-huh.
I got hit one time in my hand, but that's a small shell. You know, a small arm, so...
It was that day, or
reached
no?
Out, yeah. Reach down, pull it out with your teeth, because it burns. It burns like it's on fire.
Okay, you're saying that like it's not a big deal, but the rest of us, for the most part, have not been in these kind of situations. So you're 18 years old, you're on the beach on the first day of one of the biggest battles in the history of the world, and a bullet hits you?
Yep. You're scared.
Well, yeah, I would think so. We need to catch our first break right now, but when we come back, we'll try to get to the bottom of that. It happens so often on this show, but it never ceases to amaze me how these veterans refer to life-threatening situations as if they were just some run-of-the-mill experience. Check out the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for a video of George Chrisman and that flag he captured on the first day of the Battle of Okinawa. And keep it right here, because Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real.
a sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.